Blog Talk Radio. To you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, hello. You're on the Taz and Paula Show. This is Paula Nunes.
And this is Taz Powers.
Well, Taz, we have another great guest today, Dr. Fred Alan Wolf, also known as Dr. Quantum. He's a physicist, writer, lecturer who earned his PhD in theoretical physics at UCLA in 1963. He continues to write, lecture, and teach throughout the world and conduct research on the relationship of quantum physics to consciousness. He is a member of the Martin Luther King Jr. Collegium of Scholars. Dr. Wolf has taught at the University of London, University of Paris, and Nuclear Hahn-Meitner Institute for Nuclear Physics in Berlin, the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and San Diego State University in the United States. Dr. Fred Alan Wolf is best known for his contributions through the technical papers and popular books, but he's frequently in demand as a lecturer, keynote speaker, and consultant to the industry and the media. Dr. Wolf is well known for his simplification of new physics and perhaps best known as the author of Taking the Quantum Leap, which in 1982 was the recipient of the prestigious National Book Award for Science. His work in quantum physics and consciousness is well known through his popular and scientific writing. He is the author of 11 books.
And he is a former professor of physics at San Diego State University for 12 years. And he also has appeared as the resident physicist on the Discovery Channel's The No Zone and many radio talk shows and television shows across the United States and abroad. And an endorsement on his book, The Yoga of Time Travel from Deepak Chopra, says, Fred Alan Wolf is one of the most eloquent and clear scientists who explains the relationship between the laws of nature and consciousness. And it will help you break the illusion of linear time and experience a domain that is external, timeless, and acausal. This experience helps conquer all fear, including the fear of death, and gives you a glimpse into the immortal nature of your soul. Wow. We could go on and on, but let's stop here, and let's let you know what an honor and delight it is to have you with us today. We can hardly wait to get started. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Can you hear me fine?
Yes, we can hear you great. You are literally bursting with a radiance, that all-knowing kind of radiance and excitement after the door has been opened to truth. Have you always been this way?
Oh, shucks, folks. I'm just an ordinary guy, just like everybody else. It's so funny when you work on something and, you know, you try to be communicative and to write and to explain, and you do this for like 20 years or so, and then suddenly somebody puts you in a movie and your head gets blown up to be 40 feet by 40 feet on a huge screen, and like all movie personalities, suddenly you become some kind of a quote-unquote god-like character, and people think, my God, this guy must be this, he must be that. And I'm no different than anybody else, and that's what makes this kind of funny for me to have people say such nice things about me. I mean, I'm really just an ordinary guy who's very interested in how things work and how the universe works, and I've always been intrigued by one question. The question is directed to God, and that's, how do you do it? And that's what I want to know.
Well, that movie you were referring to was What the Bleep Do We Know? Is that
What the Bleep Do We Know? The Secret, several other movies that have come out through smaller productions, DVDs and so forth, and audio CD sets. I've got three courses which I've recorded with Sound Is True, and they seem to be very popular. So it's just sort of, excuse me, being discovered at this stage of my life, which makes my life kind of interesting because I don't feel any different, even though I've been rounding this planet for three quarters of a century. It's hard for me to even believe that because I don't think of myself as being three quarters of a century old. But when I watch old movies, I seem to remember them as, oh, I remember seeing that when. And then I know, oh, wait a minute, how could I remember seeing that if I'm supposed to be so young? I must be a little older than that. Anyway, it's fun.
Well,
life is just a continuing, unraveling mystery, and I can't solve it all. I don't have all the answers. But what I have found and what I'm willing to share with people, of course, is what's going to happen next week when we get together at the Herbst Theater.
Now, I looked at everything you've done, and with everything you've done, I thought, he must be at least 150 years old, I mean, with all everything you've done. But when I was looking, I saw that you had studied with, scientists and ancient, and gone into study with shamans.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, this is my question, do shamans know as much about quantum physics as our scientists, our Western scientists?
No. Not by a long shot. No. The thing that's hard for us to understand and gets into kind of like egoic fantasies is the notion that Western culture, which develops starting with the early Greeks and rising up into the mid centuries the 11th century and the 12th century, where, believe it or not, many people don't know this, Islamic science became very well developed, and a lot of great discoveries people, don't realize how our culture has been influenced by so many cultures. We've been very much influenced by the Islamic scientists of the mid-terms, between 11th century, 12th century terms. It wasn't until the 16th and 17th centuries that influence began to infiltrate into the Western cultural world, particularly in England with the discoveries of Isaac Newton, and in Italy with Galileo Galilei, that we begin to see this emerging scientific way of thinking, which throws us into modern quantum physics, comes about. And there's a whole other worldview which we don't talk about, and that's the shamanic worldview. And it's seen in native-speaking peoples all around the world, in Native America, in Native Australia, in Aboriginal cultures, even in Native Europe before Western culture took hold. We can see another kind of, call it a science, it's very subjective and therefore very difficult to grab hold of and say, we can prove that because everybody can see that. It's very subjective, but nevertheless, it's a technology, and the shamans have developed this to a great extent. What they deal with, in comparison to what we deal with, is a whole different world. We see a little bit of a smattering of that when we look at, say, Chinese medicine, and we look at the concept of qi and ki, and the notion of the Tao. These are offshoots. These aren't like Western culture, and they're a little bit like shamanic, but they're not really like, they're more Western than the purely shamanic point of view. But they're very different. They're very intelligent. This is the mistake we make. We think that because they're not theoretical, like theoretical physics, or scientific, like our developments in our culture. But they're very intelligent, and they do serve their life purposes very, very well.
Well, can you explain exactly to our listeners what quantum physics is?
Well, I'll try to. It's a subject which has developed over a number of years, actually. But just to give you a quick kind of definition, quantum physics is the physics which describes phenomenon, things that happen that we normally don't see or reckon with in our daily lives. These are things which we now understand apply to what's called the atomic world and the subatomic world and to the world of objects that are very small that move extremely fast, moving very close to the speed of light. When we're dealing in this realm of investigation, which prior to the beginning of the 20th century was only imagined to even exist. The Greeks had an idea there were atoms, but nobody ever saw one. When we moved into the realm of technology where we could discover these things and began to see individual particles of light called photons and individual atoms, we began to actually reckon with these things. We found that the kinds of physics we were using, which described the big world of everyday stuff, no longer applied. It just, when we tried to apply down there or at that speed, we got the wrong answers. We got completely off track, and we had to invent a new kind of physics, and it was called quantum physics. And the way it was called quantum is because we found that things didn't vary in a continuous way. When we looked at energy, for example, we found that energy went bop, 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 bop. It was like little particles of interactions going on rather than definite, smooth, gradual changes in things. And so we found that everything seems to behave in this kind of particle-like way. And so the whole notion of particle physics even arose from that basic concept. So quantum physics is really the physics of the very small and the very fast, in a nutshell.
And what can we do with it?
Well, we do a lot with it. The whole world that we live in right now, the age that we live in right now, is really a quantum age. The conversation we're having right now, your internet speed, deep space communication, laser technology, the whole DVD industry, the whole our culture right now, if quantum had never been invented, this whole culture never would have happened. You never could have had a computer sitting right in front of your nose, as small as it is, that would operate as quickly as it does if it wasn't for the discoveries of quantum physics. So quantum physics, as far as technology is concerned, has been a huge impact on us. We also believe that quantum physics applies not only just to the very small and very fast, but applies everywhere, including in our human nervous systems and in our brains. And we believe that it may imply the existence of mind. So we're beginning to see quantum physics from a whole different perspective, and that is that it may actually be the physics of the universe.
So when you say mind, is that the universal mind?
Well, that's a good question. The whole point is, what is mind? And nobody knows. We can't really define what mind is. We know what mind does, and we believe that we all have something called a mind. And the question is there one mind, or do we have separate minds? The evidence seems to show from a from a quantum physics point of view that we actually may be part of a single universal one mind, and that individual minds arise as sub-minds of this one mind, but the one mind is the basic mind.
Well, I know a lot of times when there's an invention, like several people think of that invention all at one time, or an idea, it's like groups of people all of a sudden get the same idea all at once. So that, to me, kind of proves to me that there's the universal mind.
Well, it can prove that. It could also be a coincidence. In other words, we can't look at that as a proof, but we can look at it as possible evidence for. In other words, it's, it seems to support the idea that there is a one mind.
Now, just how powerful is positive thought? Let's go there.
Well, that's a good question. We need both positive and negative thought.
Ooh.
Because both are positive, both are necessary. Usually what we mean by positive and negative has something to do with life-affirming versus life-denying. But they don't have to have those meanings at all. We can look at it as positive being moving towards a goal, and negative meaning I'm not going to move towards that goal. In other words, I'm going to resist going in that direction. I seem to be getting hoarse for some reason. So I wouldn't say that we would necessarily look to positive as being always good and negative as always being bad. It's more a question of how we use our thinking, how we want to apply thinking. Actually, saying no to something is a very powerful energy. And in fact, when you study ancient spiritual texts such as Kabbalah, you find that negation, the denial, is more powerful than the affirmation or saying yes to something. So denial is very strong. So the proper use of denial or no or setting a boundary or limit is very powerful in creating how we are to use our energies. So we can't say yes to everything, and we can't keep going in the same direction all the time. Sometimes we have to change direction, and that requires negative thinking or saying no to something.
So it's becoming more in tune then with your inner self, and that's positive in itself, whether you say yes or whether you say no.
Well, here's the question. When we use positive and negative in the sense that I believe you're using it, which is to attribute positive as being life-affirming and so forth, we're really denying ourselves the ability to say no to anything. We're become then afraid of negating. We become living in fear of not going along. Now, let me give you an example of a great field of positive thinking, one of the most powerful fields of positive thinking that arose in the 20th century. It's called Nazi Germany. These people totally positive and all going along with it, and yes, they were right. And the Jews had to be killed, and they were wrong, and they were ugly, and blah. All that came from positive thinking. So you can't just go blindly into saying everything positive, positive, positive. You've got to be willing to say no sometimes. And those few brave people that did say no actually were part of the resistance. And resistance is a natural part of the universe. We need it.
Otherwise, we would be brainwashed.
Well, more than brainwashed, we'd be robots. We'd be totally mindless creatures marching in lockstep in any direction that our leader tells us to go. And that ain't American, man. That ain't American, woman. That ain't the way we are. So we have to be more careful, more willing to be critical, more willing to be open, more willing also, get this, to be closed. You know, I don't preach, I don't tell people, oh, open your hearts and everything is wonderful. No, sometimes you close your heart. Sometimes you say no to somebody. Sometimes you deny because it's important that a lesson be learned. And when you're teaching children, you don't tell them they can do anything they want. You tell them once in a while, hey, no, don't do that. You know, the little kid wants to stick a wire into the electrical outlet. You say, hey, get away from that or I'll slap you silly. Or something like that, to get the kid afraid of sticking wires into electrical outlets or walking in a red light. In other words, no is powerful. It's got to be used. We have to be smart people, not just stupid robots.
I know, that reminds me of electricity almost. You need a negative and a positive.
Absolutely. And now we're getting to what's important, the understanding of balance, the understanding of how things have a symmetry to them, how they are in balance, how the universe doesn't work by just flowing in one direction only.
Well, I know the when I was in Bali, they're talking about, they had a lot of things around death and dying. So that's the opposite of being born.
Yes, and they're equally positive in that sense, that they're equally part of the universe. They're equally part of what happens for everything. In physics, we learn that the basic understanding of the field, which is the field which makes everything happen, is both creative and annihilative. It can create and it can annihilate. It can make something happen and it can destroy what happens. And that both forces are in balance and are necessary. That is, that's the way the universe really works. And wisdom comes from understanding that. It doesn't come from walking blind step with your head in the clouds and maybe your feet on the floor and always saying, well, everything's wonderful. It's not always wonderful. There are sometimes things that are not, that are pretty terrible. And we have to be willing to see both sides of the world in order to live in it and live in it with as much happiness as we can.
Well, I remember probably in the early 80s, the positive affirmations were really popular.
They were, because people in our culture, and why this is so is kind of a mystery. People in our culture come into our culture with what might be called an indoctrinated negative attitude. Maybe it comes from our religious teachings that we're all born as sinners, or we're all born imperfect, or we all are, you know, lacking, or something of that sort, which is part of maybe religious indoctrination. I don't know. But whatever it is, there's a tendency towards our culture to take the negative over the positive. And so what we do is we get a bunch of positivistic type of guys and gals who can stand in front of an audience and go, rah, rah, let's go for it. And they become motivational leaders, and everybody says, oh, my God, what a wonderful talk. And the next day, they're right down in the dumps as they were before. So you see, we have motivational exercises weeks, and we read books. How can I make myself better? How can I make myself better? And actually, the answer is very simple. It's simply to let go of the notion that anything has to be better for you, so that you're opening yourself up to more possibilities and not just following lockstep the next guy's book who tells you how you can do this any better. Or lose weight. How about lose weight books? I mean, look at all the people that are constantly trying to lose weight. It's easy to lose weight, but it requires a discipline. It requires an energy usage. It requires a willpower. It requires a desire to actually do it by your own means, rather than having somebody else tell you how to do it.
Well, I always thought if in a positive, people would say, I'm going to have a red Corvette by next year.
Yeah.
If there's a little bit of your thought process that says, no way.
Well, there's always going to be a negative. Let me explain how that works. For every positive that gets created, a negative also gets created. For every positive thought, a doubt arises. This is the balance. Now you have a choice. You can either go in the direction of the positive and move in that direction by reinforcing it, by practicing it, by developing habitual patterns of action which tend to move you in that direction, or you can exercise negative thinking and simply go in the direction in which negativity is telling you. So whatever direction you exercise, you will take an action. You may think, I'm not going to do anything. Not doing anything is an action, because you can't do nothing. Just every moment you have to do something. The first thing you have to do, you got to take in air. You got to breathe. What else you have to do? You got to move. What else you got to do? You got to eat. What else you got to do? You got to get up. You got to go to the bathroom. You cannot live doing nothing. You're always doing something. So the question is, what do you want to do and how do you want to do it? And that's the big thing. Learning to understand that when a new thought arises, a negative of the thought will arise. You have a choice. This is the remarkable aspect of creativity, the remarkable aspect of the way the universe works. For every positive, there is a negative. For everything that goes up, there is something going down.
So if you get a creative idea, let's say,
yeah,
and you take action towards that creative activity,
yes,
does your process, your thinking process, beyond the actual action, does your thinking process have something to do with moving towards that creation? I don't know if I'm phrasing the question correctly, but...
Well, once you have a vision of where you want to go, once you have a... there are two things that we think about when it comes to creative activity. One is reaching a goal, and the other is moving in the direction. Now, they're not the same things. They look alike. Let me give you an example. I want to go to China. That's a goal, and I'm going to go there. The next thing is, I want to travel east. Now, traveling east is a direction, but not a goal. And yet, traveling east opens up much more possibilities than just going to China. Going to China is just one place. I mean, it's a wonderful country, and I'm not saying anything bad about it, but it's only one type of activity. Whereas going east opens you up to, wow, I'm in California. What people in New York doing? Oh, wait a minute. What about people... in England, what about people in Czechoslovakia, in Yugoslavia, former countries are now called Czech Republic and so forth. I won't get into the names of all the different countries, but wherever we're going east. And as we go east, we become culturally enriched by the experience of going east. So what's more important, going east or going to a particular country? Clearly, it's the action of movement, the continuity of going east, which is more important than reaching a goal. Wanting a big car? Great. But let me tell you something. 4 days after you get that big, beautiful, red, blah, blah, blah car and have it parked in your garage, you're going to be going through three kinds of thoughts. One, will anybody scratch it? I got to keep it. Hey, what am I going to do if somebody scratches my car? I got to get more insurance. So you're becoming like a monkey and you're going crazy because you're worried about your object that you just bought. Second thing, after maybe three more stories, well, I don't want so big about it. So I got a car, so what? I'm just as bored and stupid as I was before I got this car. So maybe I can get a bigger and better car. And so I go on the other illusion of the somehow... Whereas the real thought, the pure thought, the thought which really motivates you is, I want to move in the direction in which I better myself and better the world. Now we have a whole different kind of energy going on here. And that's what I'm going to be talking about in my energy lecture, is just what that difference is between how we move and how, going for goals or going in the directions, how different they are.
When you describe going east, that just made me feel like life is magical.
Well, life is totally magical in the following sense, that we don't know or have an answer or even have a prescribed program that will tell us that we are to achieve success no matter what we do, or the vice versa. That we will always fail no matter what we do. There's no such program. You out there listening to this show, you have as much right, privilege, brain power, energy as the next guy sitting next to you, and he may have just succeeded at getting whatever he thought he needed, and you may have just failed at getting what you thought you needed. Let me tell you something. There was nothing guaranteeing either one of those things. And tomorrow, he may be flat on his face in failure, and you may be sitting on top of the mountain in great success.
So it looks like the journey. So it looks like the journey of what you're doing, no matter what it is the magic.
It's definitely the journey is the magic. It's the, it's, the goal is the, in terms of percentages, the goal is 0.00001%, whereas the journey is 99.9999% of the joy of experiencing life.
Now, what's real exciting, on February 19th, you have a whole series that starts. It's called Energy by Design and the Science Behind Success. And do you want to elaborate on this a little bit to give people some tidbits here, what we're going to be able to accomplish with this particular day?
Guess what? I just did.
Okay, I was just thinking, all right.
You've been asking me the questions, but have you been listening? Yes, I just did that. What do you think I've been doing this whole show? This whole show has been about, you know, just that, energy by design, how we use our energy. Yes, that's just what I just did. Let me put it in a nutshell for you. You got two choices in life. Go for goals or go in the direction in which you can improve your life and improve the lives of others around you.
Yeah,
That's so simple.
Well, it is simple. However, I think people do get stuck.
Yes, they do. And we're going to explain, first of all, what energy is, what it really is. Then we're going to get into a little bit of quantum physics of what energy is. And then we're going to get into how you achieve success using these new ideas that I'm going to be throwing at you. About
all right.
How to use your energy correctly, and that's basically what our first lesson will be. I think the one coming up on March the 19th is with Joey Yap, and he and I are going to be having a dialogue about Eastern and Western visions of energy, and I think that should be really exciting because it'll give our audiences a chance to see the difference between the Western and so-called Eastern way of seeing. Let me give you another hint. There's a magical word that we all use that is at the prime focus of this whole topic, and that word is ego. We're going to explain a little bit about what ego is, what it has to do with energy, and why this ego state that you think maybe you're stuck with is actually a changing thing. And by learning how you can change this thing you call ego, you can actually learn the difference between moving towards a goal or moving in energy.
Ooh.
And actually, can we use the ego to help us move that way then?
Well, that's exactly it. It's, you can think of the ego as something under your control. It's not controlling you. You're controlling it.
So is it imagination?
It's more than imagination. It's a definite purpose, and the whole universe has ego. Ego is very important. It's a very important thing. It does form structure. It has a role. It's more than imagination.
Now, can you use your techniques even for help?
Help?
Help.
Can I use it for
help?
Or for health?
Uh-huh.
Oh, for health. Well, yes, you can. Of course you can. Health is a very interesting question because there are many processes going on that are beyond or seemingly beyond our mindful control. We all suffer through some of these things, the fact is we come into form in bodies that age, and as they age, and they age at different rates, there are things which change, and we are going to experience those changes as a result of universal law, but we ourselves can modify how we undergo those changes and how we can make those changes more meaningful and more important and more and healthier for ourselves and our psyches.
So harnessing this energy that we have, becoming more conscious with it maybe, And the feeling that we have back and forth in our body as we're doing it, is that like our soul?
Well, the soul has something to do with it. I'm not going to get too much into soul in the first lecture. It's something that may indeed arise in the second lecture. The soul has something to do with the formation of a field of consciousness within the whole universe. That soul is something which arises as time and space and energy arise. And it's the basis of what we might call the universal mind or the whole mind. We ourselves are reflections of that process. That is our individuated souls, the ones that we think of when we think of ourselves as beings. Those are reflections of this process, and these reflections of this process are not what I would call perfect reflections. They are reflections which have certain idiosyncratic behavioral patterns in them, which arise through genetic code, through natural processes, through random selection, even through evolutionary forces, as Darwin correctly pointed out years ago. So there are definite things going on which modify how the soul, the universal soul, is reflected in our individual souls, giving us a sense of who we are and what we are, and indeed a sense of being a person with an ego.
Now, a Native American said to me that you can change things with the past, the now, and the future all at one time. Is that saying that time goes back and forth?
It's saying that we can go back and forth in something in what we call time. Time is a subjective quality that we have found a way to make an objective quantity by agreement and memory and agreement as to what memory does and how memory behaves and how we sequence memory into parcels. We call that tick-tock, 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 time marching on, or the clock time. And that is an objective sense of something which is inherently subjective or within us. If you ask me what time actually is, I sit and wonder and stare and look out into space and say, I haven't got the foggiest idea what it is, because I have nothing to compare it with. If you ask me how time behaves, I can't even answer that question. I can only say that we have created from an inner knowing a sense of something we call objective time that we put out into the world as memory sequences, which we call tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. It's 1 second later.
So if we go back, as an example, in childhood and heal something that happened to us in childhood, and that helps the memory bring the future in better?
If you go back in your mind and remember a childhood incident, for example, in which maybe you suffered some thing which caused you to change your whole lifestyle and your whole way of being in the world, and that memory is currently running your show, so to speak. In other words, every time you take a step in a certain direction, which you normally would be able to take without fear, you now take with fear because of what happened to you as a child. For example, a child gets bit by a large dog and from that point on has a fear of dogs. This is a simple example, and it may not always be true, of course. Or you may have been hurt or beaten by a parental figure or worse, and as a result you don't trust people who are, in your mind, elderly, or people who are older, or people who are in positions of power. You have a built-in mistrust of governmental figures, for example, or something of that sort, due to this. In other words, the steps you would take, which would allow you more freedom of your life, have now been dictated or controlled by this continual remembrance of an outcome that took place many years ago. Of course, you can go back in time and forgive that. And whether you actually are going back in time to the actual event and changing it or not, no one really knows. All we can simply say is if you let go back in time and let go of whatever it is that's holding you back by giving what is called forgiveness to yourself and to the other, letting it go, just forgiving it. That the guy was stupid, or it was stupid, or I was stupid, I forgive myself for my stupidity, for his insane acts, I forgive myself for those things. I give up on holding on to those things. I want to see life anew, and I'm going to now cultivate looking at things with trust and love rather than with fear and regret.
So for that to happen, we are creating a better now and creating a better future.
Well, let's put it this way. We're creating a future and a now that is more commensurate with a true, more open, more profound, more a wiser way of living. One of the things that I believe is extremely important is that people let go of simply materializing their lives and grapple with and hang on to learning to understand and become wiser, to use their minds to learn how the universe works, to learn what science is about, to learn what mathematics is all about, to allow yourself the privilege, the joy of discovery. By cutting yourself off because you decided that you just can't do that, there is, let me say this to all humans that walk the current planet, there is nothing you cannot do. There is no science that you cannot understand. There is no mathematics, no matter how highfalutin it may be, that you, with patience and willingness, cannot learn to understand. There's no musical instrument that you cannot play. There is no athletic sport that you cannot develop skill at. There is nothing that you see other humans doing that you yourself cannot do. There's nothing preventing that from happening. There's nothing. There's no genetic code that tells you you can't. You're not born stupid. You're not born super genius either. Although some people may be born with certain natural tendencies to improve at being stupid or improve at being wise, there may be some tendencies there, but they're not built into the point that you're a robot and have to go along with those tendencies. You can use your power of yes and no. You can use the power of the universe to create and annihilate in order to change the direction of the stream of life in which you are moving.
So we can kiss fate goodbye.
You can kiss fate goodbye, or you can grab onto it,
yeah,
and simply go with what you believe is the intuitive flow of fate. You can do whatever you want to do. This is the power of being a human being. This is the power that we have. We have this ability. This is something that is God-given, or where it comes from, who knows, whatever you want to talk about it. It's such a profound gift. It's such a waste to live your life and not develop your desire to manifest things that truly benefit you. And let me tell you something. Learning benefits you. Understanding the true nature of reality unbenefits you. Rather than blindly following some stupid jerk that tells you what you can and can't do, including maybe this jerk speaking to you right now, whatever you want to call me, I don't care. What I'm more interested in is you and how you are going to use your powers to make yourself a better life, and you can do it. There's nothing in your way. I don't care what handicap you think you got. There's nothing in your way. And when I talk with people who have clear, severe handicaps, and they succeeded at doing things. I met a guy at a film festival in Colorado a year or two ago, and we're talking and we're walking together, and he's telling me about how he's been doing this downhill skiing and blah blah blah, and he said he's been doing this ever since he lost his leg. And I said, what? You lost your leg? He says, yeah, I lost my. You mean you have an artificial leg? I couldn't tell. This guy lost a leg, and because he wanted to ski, he learned how to use an artificial leg to the point where we watching him, could not see anything to indicate he had an artificial leg. And this guy's running and skiing and doing. There's not anything that you can't do these days if you have the desire and are willing to be patient with yourself, are willing to put the work and the energy into it. It's all it takes is the desire has to be there first. If you don't have the desire, forget about it, man. Go back and watch your television program. Just take it easy, man. You don't have to do anything. Nobody's telling you you have to do it. Just forget about it, man. Take it easy. But if you got the desire, if the desire is there and the thought comes up, well, I can't do that, that thought has an opposite saying, I can do that. If you're thinking I can't do it, guess what? You're also thinking I can. So go with the I can rather than I cannot.
Now, I'm curious, how did you start getting involved in thinking process and teaching it?
It was a gradual development. It started with my education in physics, and particularly understanding the laws of the universe. I began to see things about how the universe works, which opened my mind and said, wow, this is really interesting. People should know this. I mean, it's not just, you know, a machine. There's something really remarkable going on here. So that started me off. And then I began to write about it and to teach about it. And I've been doing this since about, I would say, mid-1970s. So I've been doing it a long time. And it just keeps going. It just keeps going. I keep seeing new insights into how things work, and that's what I keep teaching.
Wow. Well, Paula, let me just take a minute here. We've been talking with Dr. Fred Allen Wolf, and he actually has a couple upcoming venues, March 19th and February 19th. That's kind of backward there. But both of them are going to be in the Hearst Theater, located inside the San Francisco War Memorial Veterans Building on Van Ness in San Francisco. And these both venues will definitely help people to look at life, to actually gain a momentum to be able to see, shall we say, on both sides? Both sides of the spectrum here.
To be able to balance yourself so that you're not constantly swayed into thinking that you can, you know, I can do anything, oh boy, and then not doing nothing, or any kind of that. It'll help you get rid of what I call crazy thinking. Crazy thinking is thinking that you can't do anything because you're inept. That's insane. Or thinking, I can do everything because I'm just super. That's equally insane. But learning how to be in balance and learning how you can actually accomplish things through a desire and willingness to move in the direction you want to go rather than getting a particular goal. Goal thinking is old-fashioned these days. We want to get people moving.
So we're traveling east. We're traveling east, and we're taking a journey.
That's it. We want to get on. We want to take this journey and not just constantly get off and sit around in the stops waiting for the next car to come along. Stay on the train.
Well, is there a telephone? Taz, you want to give a telephone number?
Yes, there is a telephone number that people can call, and it's 415 415- 406-2816. And again, the number is 415-706-2816. And people can find out more about the event and where to go and what to do. There is a special website as well. It's called the energybydesignseminars.com. And then there's a forward slash with, excuse me, T like Taz, T-A-P-S. And actually it stands for Taz and Paula Show. So it's kind of a code, a promo code that people can use. And our
you get a discount
events,
on the ticket.
Yeah, you can get a special discount on the ticket. And it's incredible. It's absolutely unheard of what both of these events, I mean, you can, it's like buying a lunch. It's really awesome. And Dr. Wolf has really allowed everyone to be able to go and not worry about finances. It's such a jolt, and the ability to be able to look at yourself and where you're going and how to get there in a whole new way.
And it's a 2-day event.
It's a month apart. It's February 19th. And March 19th. And so it's the, it's a month apart. It gives you time to be able to relook at what took place in the first event and then go to the second. And Joey Yap will be there and is going to be joining with him also for merging the Eastern energy practices and Western science, intersecting the two. And it's really going to be an incredible event, you can imagine. We've had fun with Dr. Wolf today, just working back and forth here and finding out, just what we can do, what we can tap into this new journey.
Yeah, you might also want to mention that, in case you forget all that, there's also cityboxoffice.com. You can just go right there and you can get tickets there. I'm not sure if they're discounted or not, but I think if you forget all this, City Box Office will be able to get you tickets.
And if you go on the TazandPaulaShow.com, you can actually see a write-up about Dr. Wolf, and it actually connects into his website. So you can read more about the articles he's written. I mean, you've written so many articles. There's so much to learn and read on your website, so that's great.
Well,
do a lot of programs that are podcast, and you can listen to those too.
And if we get to talk to you again or interview you again, Dr. Wolf, I would love to talk about dreams.
Okay.
Because I saw one of the articles that you wrote about dreams. It was fascinating.
Right. In fact, I wrote a book about it called The Dreaming Universe.
So in your book, The Dreaming Universe, do you tell people how they can work with their dreams?
Not so much do I tell people how they can work with their dreams, but I do go into what are dreams and how, by understanding what dreams are and what role they might play in your life, that you yourself can learn to do with your dreams and what you think you need to do with them. Not so much a how-to, but what is book.
Yeah, it's like your psych is telling you, giving you messages.
Yeah. When it comes to how-to stuff, people always ask me, well, how do I do this? Give me some steps that I have to follow. And everybody wants those steps. So what I'm trying to get people to do is to invent their own steps. If you understand what direction you want to go in, and if you understand how things work, your natural creative juice, your brain, your mind, your spirit, will bring about steps that you can follow. And you don't have to look to some other quote-unquote expert to tell you whether that step is valid or not. Your intuitive knowing will tell you that it's valid or not. And this is what I'm trying, this is what my teaching is all about, is basically developing people to stand on their own, to move in the directions that they can go in through the uniqueness of their own personal lifestyle, their own personal being. I don't want to live in a world of robots. I don't want to live in a world of people always following somebody else to get to where they're going. I want to live in a world of original people who are coming up with new ideas, new concepts, so that I can learn from them what their life message is all about. That's what I hope to share with other people who come to hear me, is what my life message is all about. And hopefully that can help you gain insight into what your life message is really all about.
Now, you've written many, many books. Is there any favorite that you have?
Well, for people who are just getting on to me, have never really read me before, there's a book that I really recommend. It's called The Little Book of Big Ideas. Very simple. It's just a lot of things that I've said over the years that have been put together in a little book, so people can be standing on the bus and holding onto a strap with one hand and looking through the pages of this book and getting a hit before you get off at the next stop. It's like that kind of simplicity, that kind of thing. A little book of big ideas. You can get it from my website. It's also from Moment Point Press, or from your local bookstore. That's one that I highly recommend for people who are just getting on to me for the first time. I write different styles. I write books that are about quantum physics, explaining the basic ideas. I write books about metaphysical concepts, the mystical concepts, the spiritual concepts. I have a range of dreamings, what dreams are all about. So I have a range of different topics that I write about, depending on your particular interest. Time travel, using your mind. I have a book, Yoga of Time Travel. I've got audio books out there. They're all Dr. Quantum Presents, A Guide to Your Universe, Meet the Real Creator, You, and Do-It-Yourself Time Travel. These are three audio courses that you can buy. You can find out more from my website, books, all kinds of stuff. Anyway,
we need a series. We need a series with Dr. Wolf.
It's always anything's possible. I listen to a lot of stuff.
Oh, great.
Well, we've enjoyed our time with you today, and I'm sure our listeners have too.
Yes,
well,
thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Well, we'll see you in San Francisco.
Okay, you guys you gals are both coming, right?
Yes, we'd love to.
Okay, good. Well, come on.
Okay.
We want to enjoy the show. It's also a lot of fun to watch people in the audience as I do this thing with them because people do respond. And I have a lot of fun working with that response.
Okay.
I can't even tell you what I'm going to say yet, because a lot of what I say depends on what's being heard. If nothing's being heard, I change what I'm saying.
He jumps up and down. We're going to jump up and down. We need to go, unfortunately. Yeah. But, Dr. Wolf, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day. We'll see you in San Francisco, and along with other people, I'm sure. Give everybody a call. And the phone number to call would be 415-706-2816. If you have any questions, you can email us, and I'll be happy to let you know. You have a blessed day, and thank you.
Thank you, ladies.